Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 5th Canto, 11th Chapter, Text 7. Tavanayam viyavahara saravi. Tavanayam viyavahara saravi. Kshetragya sakshyo bhavati stula sukshma. Tasman mano lingam mado vadanti. Guna gunatvasya paravarasya. Tavanayam vyavahara saravi. Kshetragya sakshyo bhavati stula sukshma. Tasman mano lingam mado vadanti. Guna gunatvasya paravarasya. Tavanayam vyavahara saravi. Kshetragya sakshyo bhavati stula sukshma. Tasman mano lingam mado vadanti. Guna gunat vasya paravarasya. Tavan, until that time, I am this. Vyavahara, the artificial designations, being fat or skinny, or belonging to the demigods or human beings. Sada, always. Avi, manifesting. Kshetragya, of the living entity. Sakshya, testimony. Bhavati, is. Stula, sukshma, fat and skinny. Tasmad, therefore. Mana, the mind. Lingam, the cause. Ada, this. Vedanti, they say. Guna, aguna, vasya, of being absorbed in material qualities or devoid of material qualities. Para-avarasya, and lower and higher conditions of life. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, C.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The mind makes the living entity within this material world wander through different species of life. And thus the living entity experiences mundane affairs in different forms as a human being. demigod, fat person, skinny person, and so forth. Learned scholars say that bodily appearance, bondage, and liberation are caused by the mind. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Just as the mind is the cause of bondage, it can also be the cause of liberation. The mind is described here as pada avada. Pada means transcendental, and avada means material. When the mind is engaged in the Lord's service, savai mana krishna tadadavindayo, it is called pada, transcendental. When the mind is engaged in material sense gratification, it is called avada, or material. At the present moment, in our conditioned state, our mind is fully absorbed in material sense gratification, but it can be purified and brought to its original Krishna consciousness by the process of devotional service. We have often given the example of Ambarish Maharaj, savai mana krishna padadavindayo pachamshi vaikunta gunanavarnane. The mind must be controlled in Krishna consciousness. The tongue can be utilized to spread the message of Krishna and glorify the Lord or take prasad. The remnants of food offered to Krishna, seva mukhi hi jivado. When one utilizes the tongue in service of the Lord, the other senses can become purified. As stated in Narada Pancharatra, sarvapati vinirmuktam tat pavartena nirmalam. When the mind and senses are purified, one's total existence is purified, and one's designations are also purified. One no longer considers himself a human being, a demigod, cat, dog, Hindu, Muslim, and so forth. When the senses and mind are purified, and one is fully engaged in Krishna's service, one can be liberated and return home back to Godhead. Namam Vishnu Vidaya Krishna Pastan Vidalesh Mati Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Namane Namaste Saraswati Devi Gaudavani Pacharane Nivashesha Sanyavadi Pastitarishtane Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhuna Chananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasati Gaudav Bhakti Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Vama Hare Vama Rama Rama Hare Hare. So the mind here is being identified as a cause, as a possible cause of bondage, and also as a cause of liberation. But we should clearly understand, though, that the mind, it is a cause, undoubtedly, but it's not the original cause. It's not the original cause. I mean, after all, the mind is matter. Bhumer, apo, nalo, vayu, kam, mano, buddha evacha, ahankara, iti, ame, bina, prakatyasada. It's one of the eight separated energies of Krishna. It's matter. It's inanimate matter. It's subtle, but it's still matter. And it's not the original cause of our bondage or the original cause of our liberation. The original cause of our bondage is misuse of our free will, you know, misuse of the minute free will of the living entity. And the cause of liberation is when the living entity starts properly using the free will. See? But the mind figures in there. See? It's just like if, say, somebody's in prison, okay? The original cause of their being in prison, is some crime they committed. Right, it's not that they're not getting along with the prison guard, or you know, they don't like the rules and regs in the prison. You see, but that is something they got to deal with. You see, and when the prison guard comes around and says, "Okay, so and so, time to get out of the cell here and go into this place and do this or that," you got to deal with that. You can't just say, "Sorry, buddy. Hey, actually, I see the light now. I realize I made a mistake by 10 years ago, trying to live in defiance to the not being a law-abiding citizen, and I've seen the error in my ways." And I'm, hey, get out of here! Get out of the cell. You're going to cooperate or not? Like that. It's kind of like, okay, yeah, that is true. That figures in there that you're aware of your original mistake and the bigger picture. But in the meantime, you got to deal with the prison guys. You got to deal with the rules and regs in the prison, and you got to deal with the guard there, etc. You see, so it's like that. As I mentioned, the original cause of us being here in the material world is rebellion against the will of Krishna. We didn't want to serve Krishna. But in the meantime, now we got to deal with this. Just like Prabhupada, sometimes devotees used to ask Prabhupada. Prabhupada, how did we come to the material world? And, when was it that the jiva... And Prabhupada said, look, and he would give the analogy. Just like when you go to a doctor, you don't start getting into the, when did you contract this disease? And he diagnoses you and he prescribes treatment. We got to get on with this. The real issue at hand here is like how to get you well again. You're sick and that's the first thing we got to deal with here. What do you got and how to get rid of it? You see? So in that sense, it's a cause. It's definitely there, and we got to deal with it. Not to belabor, but just to make this point a little bit clearer, I paraphrased the verse here, the translation, just substituting, another word or another idea, just to make this point clear. It says, the car makes the driver on the system of the roads move through different areas, and thus the driver experiences life on the road in different locales under different climatic conditions, such as pouring rain, overcast skies, and bright sunny days. CHIPS, the California Highway Patrol, says that the kind of ride you experience, or whether or not you make it to your final destination, are caused by the car. Well, yeah, that's to a certain extent, that's true. I mean, the car figures in the picture there. It's a factor. But, it's not the ultimate factor. The person, the driver has a lot to do with it. You see? So in the same way, the mind is instrumental in the whole thing. It figures into the picture, but in one sense it's an immediate cause. It's not the remote cause of the bondage or the liberation. But it is something that that we have to deal with. And Prabhupada points out that another place is about this. The mind is that the problem is we've given power of attorney to the mind. Prabhupada used to use that expression quite a bit, power of attorney, in relation to this particular thing here of the mind, and also in relation to one receives power of attorney to preach Krishna consciousness. But as far as in this particular situation goes, Prabhupada would say about this. We have given power of attorney to the mind, and the mind is always driving us. Come here, go there. One has to stop such nonsense. And then this is another statement from Prabhupada. Says, for example, as long as a child is under the care of his parents, he has no fear. But as soon as he is free from, as soon as he becomes free, he finds many impediments. One last one. The spirit soul is superior to all, but because he is sleeping, he has given power of attorney to his nonsense mind. However, when the soul is awakened, he is once again master, and the servant cannot act improperly or do anything nonsense properly. So why is the mind nonsense? Well, because the nature of the mind is that it's interested in immediate gratification. Prabhupada used to use those two words, prayas and shreyas. So the mind is interested in prayas, immediate gratification. That's the function of the mind, accepting and rejecting what? Sense gratification, what's going to be pleasant, and what's rejecting what's not going to be pleasant. Whereas the intelligence, the function of the intelligence is to try to ascertain what's going to be beneficial, and if the intelligence is working well, ultimately beneficial. See, so that's why the mind is nonsense, because sometimes it's referred to as chanchala himana krishna, it's flickering, because it's always accepting and rejecting, what's pleasant, what's not pleasant, like that. And if you give your power of attorney to the mind, it's like giving your power of attorney to a child, basically, And in the Kali Yuga, it's like a child that's a juvenile delinquent. You got a problem, you see? Because he's not thinking about what's going to be ultimately beneficial. He's just thinking about what's going to be gratifying at that moment. Okay? So one more statement from Prabhupada says, if you get a good manager, if one gets a good manager, his estate is very nicely managed. But if the manager is a thief, his estate is spoiled. Similarly, in his material conditional existence, the living entity gives power of attorney to his mind. As such, he is liable to be misdirected by his mind into enjoying sense objects. Okay? So we have to take that power of attorney back. We've given it to the mind. Well, the question comes then, the question arises, can you get the power of attorney back? And the answer is, yeah, you can. You can. Well, I looked up on the internet what exactly is meant by power of attorney. It said here, authorization for someone to act on or on in behalf, sorry, actually, authorization for someone to act on legal and business affairs. The person authorizing the other to act is the grantor or donor, and the one authorized to act is the agent. And then there was There's this one very interesting website where it talked about, Superior Court of California Self-Service Center, and it raised specific questions. So one of them was, once the power of attorney is in effect, can I still make decisions on my own? And the answer was, yes, you can. You can make all the financial decisions you used to make before you had a power of attorney. Another question was, can the agent do those things for me too? Can the person who gave power of attorney to? Yes, your agent can also. So that's interesting, and that kind of applies to devotees, that, you know, we've given power of attorney, the conditioned soul has given power of attorney over to the mind, but when you become a devotee, it's like kind of asking for it back. And to a certain extent, Krishna gives it to you back. When you're engaging in devotional service, obviously, you got the power of attorney back. But at the same time, until you're, we're in a probationary stage, devotees here in this material world, we can make the decision to engage in devotional service, and it's like we have the power of attorney because here we are, we're engaging in devotional service. But at the moment we don't utilize that, if we just like relax, then Maya or the mind also still has that power of attorney, and she can act too. So that's what we find. It's like, that's why I said we have to be always engaged in devotional service, because as soon as we allow a moment for lapse, then Maya's right there. And Maya's got her. She's going to use that power of attorney to try to engage us in sense gratification. So here's an interesting question. It says, can I cancel or change my power of attorney? And the answer is yes. You have to cancel it in writing. Then give your statement of the new power of attorney to any institution, such as a bank or brokerage firm like that, that had the old power of attorney. Until you do this, they can still use your original document. So in other words, the analogy there is that we have to make a real decision. We have to make a real decision that this is it. I'm done with being engaged in Maya service. Now I'm going to engage in devotional service without gap. Favorable. What are those three things? Favorably, without interruption, without motivation, without gap, like that. Once we actually really decide that that's what we're going to do in a serious way, then that's like canceling the power of attorney. See? And Krishna's waiting to see that. That's what Krishna wants to see. Krishna wants to see that we're real serious about wanting to be engaged in pure devotional service, and then the power of attorneys that was previously formally given to Maya, and then which we experience in the form of our materially conditioned mind, is canceled. Then you're engaged in pure devotional service. So we just have to be sincere about wanting to engage in devotional service, and Krishna will help. Krishna will reciprocate. Everybody knows, Krishna, sometimes it seems like, wow, this is going to be insurmountable. Actually, it's stated in the Bhagavad Gita that Mama Maya Dorajaya, that, Krishna says this divine energy of mind consisting of the three modes of material nature is Dorajaya. It's insurmountable. But then he goes on to say, but Mameviya Papajante Mayami Tam Tarantite, but one who surrenders unto me can easily cross beyond it. Can easily cross beyond it. So, yeah. And there's one really nice story that illustrates the point of how much Krishna is willing to be there for his devotees. And probably most of you have heard this story at least once, if not a dozen or 100 times, so I'll just tell it kind of quickly. It's that story where it's from the Mahabharata. And what was going on was Duryodhana was, he was criticizing, in a nice way, an affectionate way, because he was also at a very close relationship. He was criticizing Bhishma Dev. He was saying, Bhishma Dev, I don't think you're really fighting as your hardest. Because if you were fighting your hardest, you're such a great, Maharati, you could kill all these 5 Pandavas in one day. And I think because you have affection for the Pandavas, you're not really trying your hardest. And, Bhishma Dev, he was a Kshatriya, and the Kshatriyas took that kind of, this whole thing seriously about, doing your duty and your dharma and like that. So Bhishma Dev, he didn't just take those words lying down. He said, oh, so you think like that? Well, what is it? What do you want me to do? He says, well, why don't you finish him off? And he says, Duryodhana says, so he goes, okay. So Bhishma Dev, he constructed or fashioned 5 weapons, and he said, okay, tomorrow, in the battle, you know, I'm going to kill all five of those Pandavas, or at least I'm going to kill Arjuna, unless Krishna breaks his promise and intervenes. And for that purpose, I've created these five weapons. So Duryodhana was very happy. And he said, okay, that's great. He said, okay, well, you know, let me actually... And Bhishma says, so I'll see you tomorrow. He said, well, actually, Duryodhana goes, let me have those weapons. Can I hold on to those weapons? So Bhishma says, yeah, okay, sure. Okay. So Duryodhana took the weapons. And then he was thinking, okay, great. Now it's going to happen. He said he's going to do it. And I got the weapons right here. So then he was, you know, internally, he's like rejoicing. So then later, that evening, Krishna, you know, being aware of everything, Krishna said to Arjuna, you know, remember that time when you did that favor for Duryodhana? I think it was when the Kauravas were, they were out someplace and they came upon this area where the Gandharvas were doing something, and then they got into a fight with the Gandharvas, and anyway, the Kauravas got defeated by the Gandharvas, and then I think it was Arjuna and the Pandavas had to come and rescue them. They came and rescued the Kauravas, and then Duryodhana offered some benediction at that time that, you know, anything you want at some time, you can just come and ask me. So anyway, so Arjuna, Krishna reminded him of that Duryodhana had offered this benediction. And he said, okay, well, you know, you should go to his place. And he has these five weapons that were given to him by Bhishma, which he's going to use to kill you and your brothers tomorrow in the battle. Go and ask him for them. So Arjuna said, okay. So he went. And Duryodhana was there, and the tradition or the etiquette was back in those days that they would fight like anything during the day, but once the conch shell blew and the sun set, that was it. That was the end of the fighting, and the rest of the day, you know, they would go back to their own camps and rest. And sometimes they might even visit each other, and when they, if they visited each other, enemies, they would be treated very cordially, and you know, offered a lot of hospitality and like that. So that's what happened. Arjuna went there, and Duryodhana said, "Oh, Arjuna, so nice of you to come see me. You know, what can we do for you? Would you like me to, you know, is this battle becoming too difficult for you? Would you like me to, should we end the battle? Should we give you half the kingdom or whatever? You know, what would you like?" He said, no, that's okay. We can, you know, fighting should go on. We can continue. But he says, what can I do? He said, well, remember that time you offered me that benediction? He said, yeah. He said, well, I'd like those five weapons that you're holding for Bhishma, you know, Bhishma Dev, you know. He said, oh, okay, the five weapons, yeah, all right. So he went and he had to give them to him. And even then, Duryodhana realized the jig was up. You know, he Prabhupada says that even, you know, he could understand, oh, Krishna's kind of got in the picture here somehow, and he's going to mess up the whole thing. Anyway, he had to do it because he gave his Kshatriya word of honor that he would, you know, offer any benediction. So he gave him the weapons. And sure enough, that's what happened. The next day in the battle, you know, they were fighting like Bhishmadev was fighting like anything, and he was going after Arjuna, and he was really trying to, you know, get it so Arjuna would be finished. And then at one point, Krishna actually got down off his chariot, and when Arjuna was really in danger, he got down off his chariot. He grabbed the wheel of the chariot on the ground, and he rushed towards Bhishmadev. You know, to fight, to kill him, you know, to protect Arjuna. And then Bhishma Dev said, okay, well, then he stopped fighting. And he said, you know, well, I don't have to fight anymore because, you know, now what I've fulfilled my promise, which was I would fight unless you broke your promise and got involved. And you've done that. So now I don't have to, you know, do anything further. So so the point being that, you know, Krishna was more concerned about protecting his devotee than he was about being known as somebody who never breaks his promise. That was more important to Krishna. It was more important to Krishna to protect his devotee than it was to, you know, go down in history as somebody who never breaks his promise. So, of course, that was 5,000 years ago. And Krishna got criticized a lot for that over the last 5,000 years. So, you know, he's kind of like, not the same. He's become a lot more conservative. Yeah? No! It's the same old Krishna. He's the same old Krishna, good old Krishna. The same Krishna, Krishna was 5,000 years ago, that's the way he is now. You know, it's the same attitude is there. He's always there to, you know, always wants to help his devotees. And that's why it's said in the Bhagavad Gita, Kuntaya Pratijanahi, Name Bhakta Pranashati. Krishna says to Arjuna, you declare it to the world, my devotee never perishes. You know, I'm always there to protect my devotee. And in, also elsewhere, and I think it's that same chapter, ninth chapter, a couple of verses before that, Krishna says, leading up to that, he says, Samaham sabhabhuteshu name dvaistostinapriya ye bhajanti tumam bhakcha mayate te shatapiham. That, you know, I envy no one, I'm not envious of anyone, I'm equal to all, but one who renders service unto me in devotion is a friend, is in me, and I'm a friend to him. So Krishna's making it clear that, you know, when somebody is a devotee, trying to be a devotee, he's got like a special affection for them. And he's willing to actually, you know, do things for them that are he wouldn't ordinarily do, for, you know, even breaking a promise. He's even prepared to, you know, go to that extent to help a devotee, you know, to help somebody who's trying to, you know, improve that their devotional, their relationship with him. So that's something nice. But the thing we have to keep in mind is that, you know, we have to want that. We have to want that reciprocation. You know, there's that expression, God helps those who help themselves. And, you know, we have to, Prabhupada says in the Srimad Bhagavatam that, you know, Krishna wants to take us back to Godhead more than we can even imagine. So that's there. You know, that's there. But we have to want to go back to Godhead a little bit. Because we have to take initiative. We have to be like, advocate for ourselves, and we have to take initiative. We can't expect that, you know, Krishna's going to hand it over to us on a silver platter. See? Like, I'll give you an example, okay? I'm like the Sankirtan leader, okay? So, it's a little management, but not much. If the Sankirtan devotees were waiting for me to come and, you know, solve their problems or figure out how they can best do their service, well, you know, it wouldn't happen because mostly I'm just absorbed in keeping my own show on the road, you know, doing what I have to do to get out on Sankirtan myself. So they have to take initiative. Like, and I'll give you an example. Prema Sankirtan, my good buddy here, he wants to go to India. So, you know, he didn't wait around. When he figured out, he realized he wanted to go to India, he didn't wait around to think, well, yeah, I want to go to India, but I'm sure that, you know, well, Swas must know that, Bhrigupati must know that, so I'll just wait. They'll make some arrangement. No. He got, you know, he moved out on it. He realized, I want to go to India, and I've got to move out on this. I've got to take initiative. So, he went to Suvas and said, hey, what do I got to do to be able to go to India? So I told him, okay, here's your quota. And then he went to Mayapur, what do I got so far this year? And Mayapur told him, well, this is what you got so far. This is what you need. And then he figured, he sat down, he worked out, well, how many days are left? How much do I have to do each day? What am I doing each day at the airport? Is that going to be enough? No. Well, what do I got? So he worked out a program. You know, he moved out on it, and he's got a thing, you know. He's a man with a mission. And he's figured out, this is what I need to do, and this is the way I'm going to do it. And then he approached me and said, well, you know, can we do the neighborhoods together? Because I'm not doing it. It's not happening at the airport. And so I did that much. I did my job to that degree where I thought, well, I mean, he's a Sankirtan devotee. I'm supposed to be a Sankirtan leader. So, yeah, I guess I should try to serve the devotee, facilitate him, help him, you know, achieve this desire, fulfill this desire. It's a Krishna conscious desire, wanting to go to India for the festival and everything. And probably, I mean, if he does bigger, which he probably will, that means more Lakshmi comes in, more books go out. So, yeah, okay. I'll work with you. You see? So it's kind of like that, in the sense that, you know, when we, as devotees, as the individuals, when we have a desire and we want to serve Krishna in some way, then Krishna, he wants to see that. He wants to see that, okay, that we want to serve him, that, you know, we have some, we're bringing something to the table, so to speak. And, you know, Krishna, he's watching, he's observing as a super soul, and he goes, okay, oh yeah, you got a plan? You want to try to serve me in that way? Okay, I can work with that. You see? And then he reciprocates. It's not like it says. He doesn't hand it over to a silver platter. He's reciprocating. Yayatam mampapajante tamstataiva bhajamiham. So you know, we have to be like that. And yesterday I was mentioned in the class about how one of the things with the mind is you have to learn how to neglect the mind. And that's true. That's very true. But at the same time, another thing, you know, another, how would you say, aspect of a strategy and learning how to, you know, control the mind is to, sometimes we have to learn also how to dovetail the mind. You know, dovetail attachments of the mind in Krishna's service. Like there's that verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam, O great soul, Narada Muni speaking to Vyasadeva, says, O great soul, does not a thing apply therapeutically cure a disease which is caused by the very same thing? See? So sometimes, that's another strategy too. Sometimes the, you know, what was the word? neglect is there, but sometimes it's too powerful. Sometimes you're just not going to be able to pull that one off of just neglect. I mean, if you can, that's great. You know, so if somebody can neglect sex desire throughout their entire life, congratulations. You're a hero. Prabhupada says that in the fourth canon of Srimad Bhagavatam, you know. One is not attracted and just he's considered a spiritual hero. He deserves the title of Goswami. That's great. Not everybody's going to be able to do that. See? So sometimes you have to take the other strategy, which is, okay, let's, you know, apply it therapeutically. Cure a disease which is caused by this very same thing. That's what Grihastha Ashrama is all about. And that's an important thing. You know, and we have to also... the principle is, of course, is that you got to keep fighting. You got to keep struggling to try to be engaged favorably in devotional service. If you can do it, if you're strong enough, you know, you have it, your intelligence is strong enough so that you can just neglect the mind, wonderful. Congratulations. Great. That's a high level. But if you're not, then you got to adopt another strategy, which maybe this, which is, you know, apply it therapeutically. See if you can do it like that. And Prabhupada also supports that. And in the eighth canto, there's that verse about, you know, in the past time about Gajendra and the crocodile. And he's making that point about how, you know, you have to have yourself in a normal condition. And what might be a normal condition for one person might not be the normal condition for another person. But Prabhupada says that all the soldiers of the Krishna consciousness movement always have to have physical strength, enthusiasm, and a couple other things. I can't remember. And he said, and to do that, one has to be in a normal condition. And what's going to be a normal condition for one person might not be a normal condition for the other person. So in other words, you have to work it out. You have to work out what you got to do to keep your show on the road. And that's also part of learning how to control the mind. You know, just figuring out, looking at your life as a whole and you know, thinking, well, okay, how am I going to be able to do this? I'm in this for the long haul. You know, this isn't like, a 5-year thing I'm doing, or just like, it's not like, you know, you're going to school and you're out in 4 years or something like that. This is for till the moment we leave our body. So you have to be thinking, okay, well, how am I going to do this? How am I going to do this? How am I going to be in this movement for my entire life? What's going to work for me? And then you got to, act accordingly, like that. So that's another aspect of, things controlling the mind. And getting right back to the purport here, Prabhupada says, the mind must be controlled in Krishna consciousness. The tongue can be utilized to spread the message of Krishna and glorify the Lord and take prasad, the remnants of food offered to Krishna. So that's an interesting thing right there. The Prabhupada's saying the tongue can be utilized to spread the message of Krishna. So in other words, even when you're out there, when you're out preaching, distributing books or whatever, you know, preaching college engagements or preaching to guests who come to the temple, that's engaging the tongue in Krishna's service. It's not like just chanting Hare Krishna or just, you know, relating Krishna's pastimes or something like that. When you're utilizing the the tongue to spread the message of Krishna in the service of Krishna, to try to help spread this movement, that's also also counts as engaging the tongue in Krishna's service. Anyway, that's a lot of points, so I'll stop there. Are there any questions or comments? What time is it? I actually can't see the clock where I'm sitting. 10 past? Okay. Okay, going once, going twice. So, all right. Gantra Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.